The USTA and WTA have canceled their upcoming tour stop, a two-week event scheduled to open Wednesday at Indian Wells in Southern California. It's the first major U.S. sporting event shut down because of concerns around the spread of the COVID-19 coronavirus. And yet in Seattle, in a state in which there have been at least 136 confirmed cases and 19 deaths, the Sounders played the Columbus Crew on Saturday night, attracting some 33,000 fans. We're looking at those decisions through the eyes of a consultant who helps businesses prepare for and understand this very dynamic, today on Unpacked. I'm Bill King, and I'm joined today by Regina Phelps, founder of Emergency Management and Safety Solutions, a San Francisco-based consulting firm specializing in, among other things, crisis management and pandemic planning. Thanks for joining us, Regina.
My pleasure, Bill. Great to be with you.
So we've seen sporting events canceled, first in Asia and then in Europe. And now we've seen several here in the U.S. either canceled or played without spectators. And the initial blowback you hear from some has been, hey, there's only been one or a handful of cases in this city or state that we're talking about. Walk us through the thought process for event operators and hosts as they face those decisions.
Well, that's a really great question. And I certainly can appreciate that some people are skeptical when they say, oh, gosh, there's not much going on in my area. But what I would say to all of your listeners is this. We're just getting started. So first of all, the coronavirus, this COVID-19, is a new disease. It has never existed before in the history of the world. So that means that when you look at the population, everybody is susceptible. And when you look at the studies, and there are many different ways you can extrapolate the numbers, right, many people believe that somewhere between 50 and 70% of everybody in the world will actually contract this virus over the next 18 months. And depending on who you talk to and the different studies that you see, the fatality rates could be as low as 1%, and they could also be as high as up to about 3%, which is what we've varied so far.
Right.
So taking this seriously is a big deal. And I know that people keep comparing it to the flu because it's a good way to sort of hold it in your mind, but it's not the flu. And everybody needs to think about that, but it's a very different disease. And it's transmitted by two ways. Droplet nuclei, so when you speak or cough or sneeze, you're spewing out all kinds of stuff, which you can't see, which are small droplets of respiratory moisture that can't contain the virus. And then secondarily, that droplet nuclei then falls onto surfaces. And so you touch a surface like a doorknob or a handrail in a stadium, and then you scratch your nose. That's how you infect yourself.
That brings us to a great point, right? About a week and a half or so, if you'd have said social distancing to me, I might have been able to maybe take a guess, but I wasn't nearly as familiar. I wasn't nearly as familiar with that term as I've become over the last 10 days, I would say. Walk us through that a little bit, social distancing, and specifically how it ties in. When you think about, you know, when you start reading, even when it came to, you know, preparations for dealing with a flu. One of the things that you read, if you read documents from the CDC, is about taking social distancing precautions. Social distancing must be really hard when you're at a sporting event.
Yeah, I think it's the antithesis of social distancing, isn't it? So social distancing generally, depending on the disease, is between 3 and 6 feet and minimally 3 feet. And that's all the way around you. You know, so put a pin at the top of your head, go around at least 3 feet, and that's what you're talking about. So is social distancing, I think, in some sort of sporting venue would only work if you only sold seats that were literally, 3 feet apart. So you'd have kind of a patchwork view of the stadium or the seating chart that would look kind of unusual, right? Almost like a checkerboard.
Right.
But frankly, the other thing about the social distancing that's really important, which ties directly to my comment about surfaces, cleaning would be so critically important. Think of a cruise ship and all the things that have happened there. And then take that, extrapolate that to a sporting venue. Think about all the surfaces that people are touching. They're touching elevator buttons and doorknobs and banisters and the seating, the arms on a chair or a seat. Think of all the things they're touching and think about how often any of those are cleaned. And so to me, it's not just social distancing, but it's really about the overall cleanliness of the environment, because people are going to constantly be touching those items and then touching their face. And so how can somebody say, wow, I've cleaned this adequately enough to ensure my guests who are coming, my patrons, that this environment can be safe?
It was interesting, again, as I was digging around and trying to learn about this, I found a document from the CDC. It was called Get Your Mass Gathering Ready for Pandemic Flu. And it was like this really user-friendly 16-page guide of precautions you take, what to do ahead of time, what to do early, what to do if there is indeed a pandemic and of the flu. It was a 2017 document. And yet it felt a lot like in this last 10 days, everybody was sort of discovering this. Is it something that all building and event operators really should have been familiar with? Or is that just one of those documents that lives off on some website on the CDC website somewhere?
Well, you know, it's so funny that you say that, because we've been in business for 38 years. And I will tell you, of that 38 years, we've done pandemic planning for about 21. And I will tell you that no one, and I want to emphasize boldly, no one ever thinks of this at all. And when we try to encourage our clients to think about infectious disease and pandemic planning, they look at me and they kind of usually roll their eyes. They say, well, Regina, what's the chances of this happening? And I would say, you know, well, the good news is it's relatively low for a pandemic. For an infectious disease like measles, it could be much higher. But, you know, in the scheme of things, relatively low. And then they will often say to me, well, when you think we're really going to have one, let me know and we'll get ready. Now, I say that not to be facetious, but right. I think it's a risk tolerance. It's a risk tolerance. People are willing to, you know, I'm not going to invest time, money, and energy in something that the chances are happening are really, really small. And you can put a global pandemic in that category. We've only literally had about five in the last 100 years. So, you know, we do the math on that, right?
So do you think people had plans in place? No, probably not.
For sporting venues and things like that, I think overwhelmingly the answer is no. There's only two entities in the United States that are required to actually have pandemic plans. One is in the financial services industry, and that really came about after the 2009 H1N1 pandemic, and around 2007, that was a requirement. And then you see it within hospitals and healthcare systems. But other than that, no, there's no requirement. And, you know, again, if people don't have to do it and the chances are low, what are the chances of them having it? It's pretty small.
So what should building operators be doing now? What should teams be doing now? What should leads be doing? What should they be thinking about?
Well, you know, it's all, first of all, you know, protecting your assets. So protecting, if it's a sporting team, they should be thinking about how they can protect their players. And I mean, that's their investment, right? That's what they do for a living. So they better figure out ways that they can protect their employees and their players. I think for operators, they're in a much tougher position because, again, as this disease becomes more frightening, and today what, the stock market dropped 7% or something on the opening bell, as this becomes more frightening, people are not going to go out, period. Mm-hmm. And so I think what I would have them consider are how can they do things virtually, which may sound kind of stupid, but, you know, I could see them playing events with no guests.
Right.
I could see them doing streaming of sporting events as another solution, you know, kind of like how the Met does operas and they do them in theaters, right? I mean, it's kind of the same idea. I think what you have to realize is that no one's going to want to come to your venue at a certain point, which might, by the way, be happening pretty darn soon, and there's nothing you're going to do to change that. And then secondarily, they're likely to be closed by the public health department anyway at some point, because why would you send a bunch of people all together elbow to elbow, right? It's just not going to happen.
Right. One of the things that I thought about also is, you know, the impact on the service industry that I'm sure we'll see in a lot of cases, and I'm going to connect this back to sports. But, you know, in a lot of cases, these are jobs where if people don't work, they don't get paid. And on the broader scale, think about restaurants, for example. You know, what's the message to employers? Because really, that's the same dynamic. If you operate an arena, if you operate a stadium, those vendors, those ushers, all those people, they're generally day-by-day employees, right? If they don't work, they don't get paid. And so they are most likely probably to try to go to work, right?
Right. I mean, it's a super complicated issue. I've been speaking a lot about this because the impact at local communities, at the local mom and pop from a, you know, a coffee shop to a restaurant to, you know, our sporting venue are primarily comprised of a lot of hourly staff who don't get paid if they're not at work. They may not have any health benefits. And you can see the slippery slope that this is going to go down. People are going to want to come to work even if they may not feel well. It's not that they're bad people. They're trying to feed their family. And we don't have much of a social safety net in America to really support people who might look otherwise to stay home. I think this is a really tough issue, and I think the economic impacts of this potential pandemic are huge. And I'm not talking about airlines and cruise ships. I'm talking about local cities, small towns, local American places. It's going to be tough.
Last thing I wanted to touch on is that I'm going to bring together two of the things that you do, pandemic planning and crisis management. How do you walk the line between prudence and panic? Because these are, again, this is different. This isn't like, okay, Facebook sends everybody home, and I get that, and that's a big deal because that's a lot of people. Or if Nike closes a campus, that, I get that. I get that. That's a lot of people. But it's not quite as visible as when you say your home team is going to play in front of an empty arena. That'll be a very visible message. So from a both pandemic planning and crisis management standpoint, how do you view that?
Well, you know, I will tell you, this is a very fast moving situation. And what I say to you today could be completely different tomorrow. And I'm not saying that to speak out of both sides of my mouth, but this is a dynamic situation. So I think what I would encourage anybody to think about is that, first of all, transparency is really important. Honesty is really important. And really thinking about public health is really important. And so this is a real challenge when people are looking at their bottom line, and I totally get that. But what I would say to them is they're going to need to think about what messages they are sending. So, for example, If you look at different events that have canceled around the country, there's still a lot of events that are going on.
Right.
And what if you ended up being the place where Typhoid Mary happened, right?
Right.
So you had an event and all of a sudden some big outbreak occurs that all traces back to you. You know, from a rep and brand perspective, I think a crisis management perspective, that companies need to really think about, what am I doing? What message am I sending? Is this going to have a long-term impact on my rep and brand? So I think that's sort of one piece. The second piece is that I think tech companies who can easily send people home, and we have lots of clients that are tech companies, you know, they have a big advantage, right? They can actually send people home. Most of them have all of the equipment, the capabilities, and they can work remotely. But I will tell you that the vast majority of companies, that's not a majority of their work staff. And so and there's a lot of pressure that I'm hearing from my customers right now, people we've worked with for many years, that, oh my gosh, I just heard that, you know, Facebook or Salesforce or whomever is now sending everybody home, but we can't do that. And it puts people in a really tough position because, you know, are you going to send people home? If so, when? What's the criteria to send them home? And then, frankly, more importantly, what's the criteria that they can come back? Because if you send them home, you better think about what's the criteria that allows you to make the decision to ask them to come back to work. What tells you it is safer? So before people start feeling pressured to close or pressured to send people home, they need to think through that. And that's at a very high level strategically in a company. What does this mean? How am I going to make this decision? And how do I make the decision to say, oh, gosh, it's okay, we can come back?
Really great stuff. Regina Phelps, founder of Emergency Management and Safety Solutions. That's a San Francisco-based consulting firm. Thank you so much for all your insight and your help.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invitation.
All right. Thank you. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to leave us a 5-star review to help others find this podcast.